ओम गुरु ब्रह्मा गुरु विष्णु गुरु देवो महेश्वरा गुरुरेव पराब्रह्म तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः। ओम स्तपकाय च धर्मस्य सर्वधर्मस्वरूपिणे अवतारवरिष्ठाय रामकृष्णाय ते नमः। ओम तावकतामृतं तप्तजीवनं कविभिरीदितं घर्मशापहम् श्रवणमङ्गलं श्रीमदाततं भुवि गुरिनन्दि ये बुरिदा जनाः। ओ लॉर्ड, your nectar like words stop the burning misery of afflicted souls. Your words, which the poets have sung in verse, vanquish the sins of the worldly people forever. Blessed are they who hear about you. Blessed indeed are they who speak of you. How unparalleled is their bounty. Dharma, everyone. So usually on Saturday nights we have satsang. For the last few weeks, Swami Chaitanandaji has been giving them. He's now returned to the Vedanta Society in St. Louis. And tonight, Guruji, Swami Bhajanandaji, is performing a home puja. So tonight, we'll continue what we've been discussing. We've been going through the five volumes of the Sri Sri Ramakrishna Kathamrita. And so we've been going through slowly. And we're still on volume one. And so we've been going over the last few times, ending with chapter 6 and going into chapter 7. And so tonight we'll finish chapter 7 and go into chapter 8. So to recap a little bit, in chapter 7, the theme of this chapter has been the idea of faith. And Sri Ramakrishna talked about, you know, having the faith of Hanuman. You know, Hanuman, he leapt across to Lanka. And at two times ago, we talked a little bit about Hanuman's leap, his leap of faith, if you will. And he said how Hanuman, he was able to leap, but Ram himself, who was Brahman in the flesh, he had to build a bridge. So we talked a little bit about that. And last time we talked about Ram building the bridge. And we tied it into our reading of the Ramayana. So, and it all started where he was talking about the four types of beings in the world. And he used the example of the fisherman who casts his net. And there are fish, they never get caught. They see the net from a distance and they're never in the net. They're like the ever-free, the nityajib. Then there are the people who get caught, but they immediately jump out. They immediately get out of the net. They're the fish who jump out quickly. Then there are the ones who are struggling to get out. The sadhakas, we're struggling to get out of the net. But then there's the fourth type. He said, these are the ones who bury themselves deep in the mud, the net's in their mouth, and they don't even realize it. And they think, oh, I'm fine. Everything is fine. There's nothing to fear. And when he described that, he went into detail about the worldly type of person who never thinks of God even by accident. And then he said, sometimes they cannot sit still, they cannot rest. And so they say, oh, I can't sit still, so I'm working on the hedge. Or they are finding a little bit of time, they play cards. And I think he was meaning it kind of, you know, humorously. But in the room, or in his room where he was talking in Dakshineshwar, everyone was silent. Apparently a lot of them play cards, and so someone in that broke that silence and said, well, is there no hope for such worldly people? And he said, of course there is. There's faith. There's nothing higher than faith. And so this whole chapter has been talking about the power of faith. So so now we'll continue. So he's talked about faith, and then he sang one song about, if I pass away with Durga's name on my lips, I have nothing to fear. Even if I've committed the most heinous sin, I have nothing to fear. I have the ability to attain complete realization by your grace, Mother. Because you are my mother and you are forgiving. And because I have faith in you and I have complete, I will never do this again, then I know that I need not fear anything. So he was singing this song. So now, in this room, there's young Narendra, who is 19 years old, who will grow up to become Swami Vivekananda. And so this is where we left off. And so Sri Ramakrishna, he points to Narendra. You see this boy here? He acts one way here, And I love what he says, Thakur says. He said, Duronto chelle babal kache jokon boshe jamon jujuti abal chandnite jokon kele tokon ar ek murti. He said, when the naughty boy sits near the father, he acts very meek and subdued, like literally like a bug. But when he's out and he's playing in the courtyard, he acts a very different way. He's a very different form that he takes on. So Narendra, he said, Narendra and his group belong to the category of the ever-free. He says, era nita shidhirtak. He says, they're the ever-free. They've attained everything without, they're like the ones who never got caught in the net in the first place, those fish. So he's glorifying Narendra. He says, they never get entangled in the world. They become awakened at an early age and turn toward God. They come into the world to teach others. They never love worldly things. They never become attached to kamani kanchan, to lust and greed. And then Thakura starts talking again. And he says, the Vedas mention the Homa bird, which flies very high in the heavens. It lays its eggs there in the sky. When laid, the egg starts falling. But it is so high up that it continues to drop for days. The egg hatches while it is dropping. Then the chick keeps falling. The chick's eyes open and its wings grow as it keeps falling. As soon as its eyes open, the chick sees that it is falling and that it will be dashed to pieces as soon as it strikes the earth. Then the bird straightaway darts upward to its mother high in the sky. So Narendra is like the Homa bird. Narendra and his group belong to the Nitya Siddha, Nitya Siddhe, the ever free. So at this point, Narendra, probably because he's being praised, he gets up and he leaves the room. So he gets up and he leaves the room. And Kedar, Prankrishna, and M, and many others remained. And keep in mind, this is M's his only third visit to the master. And they're in Thakur's room in Dakshineswar. So now, Narendra's left. So now, Thakur keeps talking. Look, Narendra is good at everything. He's good at singing and playing instruments and studies. And the other day he had an argument with Kedar and he tore his words to shreds. The master and the others laugh. So then he turns to M and he says, is there a book on reasoning in English? And M says, well, yes, sir. There are books on logic in English. Yeah. Sri Ramakrishna, well, please tell us a little bit about what this is like. So then M writes, speaking of himself in the third person, M now got into trouble. M said, well, there's one type of reasoning in which from a general premise you reach a particular conclusion, such as all men are mortal, pundits, scholars, are men, therefore pundits are moral, are mortal. So then there's another kind where one reaches a general conclusion from a particular instance or event, such as, well, this crow is black, and that crow is black, and all the crows that we see are black, therefore, all crows must be black. But such a conclusion, M keeps talking, such a conclusion can be false because after a search, a white crow may be discovered in some country. Let's take another illustration. There is or was a cloud where there has been rain. So the general conclusion is that rain comes from the cloud. One more illustration. This man has 32 teeth. The other man also has 32 teeth. And every man we see has 32 teeth. Therefore, all men have 32 teeth. English books on logic mention such general conclusions. Sri Ramakrishna listened in a detached manner to the words, and he became absent-minded while listening. Therefore, the topic was not pursued much further. So after going through all that, Master was just kind of getting off in his... He wasn't really listening though so much. He wasn't so interested. Now remember, this chapter is entitled Upai Bishash. The means is faith. Faith is the means. That's what M has taken... We've talked before. M has taken... these conversations that took place in Dakshineshwar. And sometimes in the middle of a conversation, the way he's organized it in the book, it's a whole new chapter. From Thakur is talking in the middle of his sentence sometimes, he'll split and it'll become a new chapter. M arranged these in a way is like a meditation. So sometimes it's not by date. When Swami Nikilananda Ji of the Ramakrishna order, when he translated into English, he put all of it in chronological order. And he did it by date and he did it all together. But here, each volume goes through date by date from 1882 to 1886. Volume 2, 1882 to 1886. Volume 3, 1882 to 1886. But different dates every time. So it's like a spiral going up and up, but different, touching different points and going on deeper levels with each volume. And they're arranged in such a way that you can meditate on a certain moment within a conversation. So these are like meditations. So M has titled that portion of the conversation, "The Means is Faith." So that's how all of that, and we've just, now that ended chapter 7. So the whole theme of that was faith. And so remember the from last time, the whole chapter starts with Thakur talking about the supremacy of faith. There's nothing greater than faith. And then he talks about Hanuman's leap. He tells the story of how Vibhishana wrote the name of Ram on a leaf, and he gave it to one man, and one man was able to walk across the ocean. But then midway, he didn't know what was on it. But then midway, he goes to look and see, well, what is it? I'm walking across the ocean. What is it? And he looked, just the name of Ram written on a leaf? And he sank and drowned. The minute he lost his faith, he drowned. So he talks about the importance of faith. So it's interesting that in this chapter, the way M has structured it, it starts with the discussion of faith and ends with the discussion of logic. And ends with Thakur just getting bored, basically, with this idea of logic. It's very interesting. Because remember, it's like the man who looked and saw, just the name of Ram on the leaf, logically speaking, that's just a name on a leaf. And he drowned. It's very different than faith. But it's not an idea of faith versus logic. It's not that exactly either. With Ramakrishna, everything is practical. So if like it starts with Ramakrishna, again, he comes back to the same, what is the goal of life? God's realization is the goal of life. And so if that is your presupposition in this type of spiritual logic, then two, whatever is useful to that end, we'll do that. So faith, one of the means, bishash upai, one of the means is faith. But logic can also be a means. You could say that the neti-neti process is a type of kind of metaphysical-based logic. You know, this is not God, this is not God. All these things that are transient, all these things that are impermanent, these are not God. This is not, God is eternal, God is unchanging, this is unchanging, will decay, all of us, this body will just, this can't be it. This can't be the one eternal true substance. It's all passing away. So this process of neti-neti, you could say, is a type of logic. But it's metaphysical based. It's meant to transcend matter. That idea, that process. See, in general, you could say that Western logic is not metaphysical, it's material-based, it's worldly-based. And really, you know, if it's used to distinguish the color of crows and the number of teeth, then it's not so useful for Thakur. He doesn't really care about that. And yes, pundits will die like all the rest of us. So it's a matter of what your goal is, of what you're aiming for. So logic can be useful, but at some point it has to fall away. The logical mind has to be transcended, and in fact, the logical mind at some point will have to be destroyed. Thakur uses the example of as you have a thorn in your foot, the thorn of ignorance. And so with the thorn of knowledge, you remove the thorn of ignorance from your foot, and then you throw both thorns away. Eventually, even knowledge itself has to be thrown away, because knowledge and ignorance again, they operate in this world of opposites. It's operating within the realm of the mind. The idea of ignorance of knowledge, that's still within the realm of Maya. Eventually, knowledge itself, the knowledge known and the knower, eventually that all disappears. Swami Chaitananda Ji, just a few days ago we were with Swami Chaitananda Ji, and he said in Vedanta it is said three things happen simultaneously: God realization, the cessation of all desires, and the destruction of the mind. These things, if one of these happens, the other two happen also. They happen simultaneously. And then I was thinking, a few months back, Guruji, Swami Bhajananda, was giving satsang. He's talking about the Narasimhadev Leela. And if you remember, you heard Hiranyakashipu, great demon, he wants immortality. So he does thousands of years, tremendous austerity. And finally, he's emaciated. He's just a heart beating in a skeleton. And he's completely emaciated. He's done tremendous austerity, standing on his tiptoes, looking at the sun, and doing tremendous austerities. And so finally, Brahma comes. What boon do you want? I want immortality. And Brahma says, I'm Brahma, but even I'm not immortal. I can't give you that. And so Hiranyakashipu says, well, okay, then make it so that I cannot be killed by a man or by an animal, by night or by day, by inside or outside, on the ground or in the air, by a hand or by weapon. And he goes with all these different things, all these categories. So Brahma says, so be it. So then Hiranyakashipu's son is born, a pure bhakta, pure devotee of Vishnu. And he goes and he starts causing some problems because he's spreading this idea of devotion to God amongst his schoolmates, causing a big disturbance in the demon school. And so, you know, there's scenes in the Bhagavatam where, so he puts him on his lap, Hiranyakashipu, what did you learn in school today? So, well, I only know one thing, that Bhagavan Vishnu, he is the one Supreme Lord, and we should all be devoted to him, and anything else is just worthless. And he gets very upset. So he starts torturing the boy, tries to kill him in so many ways, but he's completely protected and he can't be harmed. And then one day, the same thing happens. So what did you learn today? Well, I learned that, what I've always said, you know, to be devoted to the Lord Vishnu is the one true goal. Nothing else really matters. And finally, he gets in this huge argument. Hiranyakashipu can't take it anymore. And so he says, this Vishnu, this God, where is this God? Where is he? Oh, he's everywhere, Prahlad says. He's in everything. He's in you. He's the power within everything. And is he everywhere? And Hiranyakashipu, in the famous scene, he says, is he in this pillar? Because he's standing in his palace. And Prahlad says, well, yes, he's in the pillar. And of course, in the story, Hiranyakashipu smashes his fist against the pillar, and the pillar breaks. But just as he does that, the pillar breaks open, and Narasimha, the man lion, we have a murti of him right up there, he bursts through the pillar. And of course, what happens, he appears, he's Narasimha, the man lion. He's not man, and he's not animal. And so he fights with Hiranyakashipu, basically for Narasimha, it's play. They say in the Bhagavatam, it says, like a cat playing with a ball of yarn or with a mouse. It says he's just playing, you know. But he's waiting. He's waiting for dusk, when it's neither night or neither day. So then he takes him to the threshold of the palace, which is neither inside nor outside. He puts him on his lap, which is neither in the air nor on the ground, and he tears open his body with his claws, which are neither hands nor weapons. I love this, a very powerful, beautiful story, and there's so many levels of meaning. But I know, and when Guruji was talking, you know, one of the meanings of Hiranyakashipu is that selfish ego. And of course, the selfish ego cannot survive in the presence of God. Sri Ramakrishna says that the ego is the wall that separates us from God. And Hiranyakashipu, if you look at it though, he tries logically to arrange his life to maintain his ego. since he knows deep down immortality is, but he thinks he can cheat it. He thinks he can get around this idea. The ego wants to be live forever. In fact, it's said in the Bhagavatam, Guruji talked about this, that even the desire for immortality is that spark of immortality that's in us. It's the soul is infinite and doesn't want to be confined and doesn't want to be finite. And that desire for immortality, to live forever, that's actually the soul crying out. But the problem is, the ego gets attached, the body consciousness gets attached, and that's where it's all messed up. Prahlad has all the things that Hiranyakashipu tried to get through thousands of yugas of austerity. Prahlad got naturally by having devotion to Vishnu, and he had God. But Hiranyakashipu had nothing. But so in that cheating, the ego, and when he was cheating and trying to get around it, he arranged it in the way he's confined in the mind. Well, it can't be night or it can't be day. It's all within the realm of opposites. It's all within how the syntax of the mind. No, not by day, not by night, not by air, not by land, not by weapon. And so, yes, now I'm covered. But he's still operating within the mind. It's a sense, he's arranged it all within the logical mind, all within the realm of logic. And of course, God smashes logic. You can't express that. The truth of everything cannot be, the mind can't hold that. The logical mind is smashed in that, along with the ego. And that's what Narada Shingadev on one level dramatically shows, that God is beyond logic, God is beyond categories, beyond opposites, transcendent and shocking to our understanding. And beyond the mind and beyond the intellect. So Thakur says, what God is can never be spoken by the tongue. Even the scriptures, Thakur says, because they are spoken with the tongue, because the scriptures are spoken with the tongue, they're muchi, they're impure. He says the tongue and the mind cannot approach what God is. Is dual and non-dual, immanent and transcendent. Later on, Thakur says that God is with form and formless. And he says, Aro tini koto ki achen ki bola jaina, ta bola jaina. He has so many other things besides that can never be described, no one will ever be able to describe. They can never be spoken. And so that leads us to the next chapter, to chapter 8. And with chapter 8, this is called Samadhi Mandire, in the temple of Samadhi. So, in the first parts of the first volume, at the beginning of each chapter, M has a verse as like an epigram, kind of also again for him, helping him for what the meditation for that chapter would be. And so for here, it's a Gita verse. It's the chapter 2, verse 53. Shruti vipratipanate yadastasyati nishchala samadavachala buddhis tadayogam avapsyasi. So in the Majumdar translation, that verse is translated as, when you're understanding, undistracted by the Vedic texts, dwells firm and unwavering in the self, then you will have wisdom. And of course, there's many different ways to translate it. Swami Shivananda of Rishikesh, he translates it, when thy intellect, perplexed by what thou hast heard, shall stand immovable and steady in the self, then thou shalt attain self-realization. So again, that idea that the mind, the intellect, the logical mind, it's perplexed by it. It can't hold that. The word shruti, it can be translated to mean the scriptures, because what has been heard. But in the previous verse, it talks about when you've passed through the forest of delusion and you are indifferent to whatever has been heard or whatever will be heard, then you will be ready for realization. And here, it's that ke yadas tasyati nishchala samadavachala buddhis. So when your intellect, your buddhis, when it's not moving, when it's fixed, achala, samadhav, basically, when it's in samadhi, when it's in samadhi, fixed, unmoving, tada yogam avapyasi, then you have attained yoga, then you have attained union, self-realization. And so continuing, so chapter 8. It's just the same day. It's just a little while later. The assembly broke up soon after, and the devotees strolled around. M was also sauntering around the Panchavati and other places. It was nearly 5 in the afternoon. After a short while, he went back to Sri Ramakrishna's room and saw a wonderful event taking place on the small veranda to the north of the room. So for those of us who've been to Dakshineshwar, outside of Thakur's room, there's the door that goes out to the Nahabat, where Holy Mother would live. And on that little veranda, this is where this was happening. Sri Ramakrishna was standing still. Narendra, Swami Vivekananda, Narendra was singing, and a few devotees were also standing. M came closer to hear the singing and remained transfixed by it. And then in the Bengali, he has the next sentence in bold. He says, Thakurer gan chara amon modhur gan tini kokono kotao shunen nai. He had never heard before such sweet singing anywhere or any time except by the master. So he's Narendra, 19-year-old Narendra is singing, and it's so sweet and so beautiful. He'd never heard anything like this. Looking at the master, he suddenly became speechless. M is now just stunned. The master was standing motionless. The eyelids were not moving, and he was hardly breathing. Upon asking, he was told it was a state called samadhi. M had never heard of anything like it before. Speechless in wonder, he was thinking, does a person lose consciousness of the external world like this by dwelling on God? And then he says, Na jane koto dur bishash bhakti takle erup hoy. How very deep his faith and devotion must be for this to happen. In the song that Narendra was singing, was Chintoy Momo Mano Shori Chidgon Niranjan. Dwell, O my mind, on the Lord who is pure, stainless consciousness. So this song was a song of the Brahmo Samaj. Narendra and many other of the young disciples who came to Sri Ramakrishna were members of the Brahmo Samaj. And this song was composed by Trailokyanath Sanyal. And he was one of the main missionaries of the Brahmo Samaj. And he wrote probably hundreds of songs for, and sometimes he would put them in the mood or sometimes the cadence of old songs by Kamalakanta and Ram Prasad. But and he would have ideas of the Brahmo Samaj and devotional themes. But he wrote hundreds of songs. And this is the third song in the Kathamrita. And it's the first time that we hear Narendra singing. And also, as we've seen, this is the first time M has ever seen Samadhi, the master in Samadhi. There will be many, many more times he sees the master in Samadhi. But this is the first time he's even seen Samadhi ever. And so, if you think about it, remember the title of the last chapter, the means is faith. Faith is the means. Well, the means to what? And so here it is. That conscious absorption in God, samadhi, that's the destination. So here's the image. This is the reason. This is what the faith is, you know, that complete absorption, whether through knowledge or through devotion, that immersion, that total absorption in your beloved. And this song goes in so beautifully into that. So dwell, O my mind, on the Lord who is pure, stainless consciousness. Chintoy mo mamono shori, chid gon niranjon. Kiba anup mut bati, mohon murati, bhagato riddari ranjon. What peerless luster and what bewitching form, and how charming to the devotee's heart, dyed in the color of newborn love, which puts to shame the luster of a million moons. Koti shoshi binindoto. The luster of his form flashes like lightning, and life thrills with delight. So Sri Ramakrishna M says, Sri Ramakrishna's body was quivering when the last line was sung. The hairs stood on end, and tears of joy flowed from his eyes. Now and then, seeing something as it were, he was smiling. Was he seeing the peerless beauty that puts to shame the luster of a million moons? Was this the vision of the luminous form of God? How much spiritual effort, how much austere practice, and how much faith and devotion must be needed to have such a vision of God? This is what M's thinking as he sees this. Koto sharon korile, koto tapashar pole, koto kanni vokti vishashir bole, erup ishwar darshan hoy. So M is thinking that effort and practice are literally, it's sadhana and tapasya, sadhana tapasya, devotion and faith. So they're dynamically balanced. Even early on here, M is thinking, this is only his third visit, and he's seeing this for the first time, but already he's thinking these ideas. You have effort and practice, sadhana and tapasya, bhakti bishash, and it's dynamically balanced. And when you could say that, like, the effort and practice, these are active things, faith and devotion, these are passive, but they're not. This is dynamic. Faith is what the power that allows Hanuman to leap. The faith is very active, sometimes in certain traditions, and sometimes in Western traditions. The idea of faith is the ends. You have faith, you believe, you are saved. Bless. But faith is the means, as the last chapter said. Faith is a power, and it allows us to. It's there for a reason. It's dynamic, and so the effort and the practice and the faith and devotion, they nourish each other. Again, faith is a means to an end. You know, we were just reading the Ramayana, and there's one point in Tulsidas's Ramayana where a lot of time is spent describing Bharat. He wants Ram to come back to Ayodhya, but Ram wants to stick to his vrat and stick to his decision. But he gives Bharat his sandals, and so Bharat takes the sandals, and he lives in a little hut. And he does all the tapasya that Ram is doing. He on his own volition, he wears very simple clothes, lets his hair become jata, and he worships the sandal. He puts the sandals on the throne. And so in other words, of course, there's much could be spoken. We could speak lifetimes about that image and about the significance of that. But also thinking, like, those sandals, they're what has been described to us, the sandals, the guru's sandals, in this case Ram's sandals, they are what Ram stands on, or what the guru stands on. Many sannyasins, they're not traditionally sannyasins do not do puja, but you're allowed to worship the guru's sandals. Because the guru's sandals, they represent the whole lineage. They represent the dharma. They represent the principles that the guru stands on, literally what he stands on. And so that is what they represent. And so for Bharat, in the absence of Ram, Ram is nowhere to be seen. Ram has left and he's in agony. But by the sandals being on that throne, Ram is there in the throne. Because what Ram stands on, what Ram adheres to, that dharma and the tradition, they're there. And so in that presence, and so in that sense, those sandals become the symbol of his faith, the power of his faith. And faith is a power. It's a dynamic thing. It's nothing passive. And there's another point. Narendra is now singing. So years later, when Narendra becomes the great Swami Vivekananda, he will write his hymn to Thakur, and then he will sing. Prabhu vakya manatita manu vanchanai kadar. Lord, you are beyond mind and speech, yet without you we think not nor speak. That's one of my favorite verses in that hymn, sung in every Ramakrishna mission at Arati time. We often do it here too. Beautiful hymn, Pandana Bhavana. Lord, you are beyond mind and speech, yet without you we think not nor speak. So as we said earlier, God is beyond these things, beyond the mind, beyond speech, beyond intellect, untouched. And yet, God is the source. We can trace everything back to that source. Yesterday, Guruji performed the annual Samadhi Havan for Swami Lakshmanju, who was a very great master of Kashmir Shaivism. And some of his disciples, he came to visit some of his American disciples. So he came to Southern California, I think it was 1990. And at this point, Swami Lakshmanju, it was towards the end of his life. And Swami Lakshmanju Usha met him, full-blown saint. And at one time, the American disciples, and one of them, an Australian disciple actually, George, who was there at the time and saw this, he tells the beautiful story of how they went to, I think, Thrifty's, and they got ice cream cones. And they gave Swami Lakshmanju an ice cream cone. And Swami Lakshmanju took the ice cream cone and he took a lick of the ice cream cone and then he went into ecstasy. And he sat there with the ice cream cone melting in his hand, and that one taste took him to Shiva. And so sometimes Guruji Bhajanananda, he will tell that story also because it illustrates everything has its source in God. And if you follow everything, even the material thing, if you follow it to its source all the way back, the source, there's only one source. It's very difficult for us, but for a full-blown saint like Swami Lakshmanju, you taste an ice cream cone, and you'll, for most of us, it just makes us want more ice cream. It's like, oh, and it's more embroiled in material matter, and, you know, want more food, and, you know, more sweets. But he tastes the subtle taste, beyond taste. So, and remember the story, you know, with Hiranyakashipu. Is God in this pillar? Prahlad says yes. And it's said in the scriptures that Narasimha didn't come to protect. He didn't come to protect Prahlad. Prahlad didn't need any protection. He didn't come to protect his devotee. Prahlad had been, so much had been done to him, poisoned, thrown off cliffs, trampled by elephants, nothing. He didn't need any protection. He came, and that Narasimhadev came to prove the words of his disciple true. Is he in this pillar? Yes. So God came out of the pillar. God is in the pillar. God is in everything. God is in every particle. Everything, everywhere, every time, as Ram Priya Das's new album is named. I remember in high school, our physics teacher told us that if you took the atomic latent energy in your pen that you're writing your notes with, you could power all of the country for 100 years if you could harness that power. And he's just talking about gross, you know, atomic energy that's latent in the atoms. If you could harness that power, you could power the whole country for 100 years. So if just on that granted, it's subtle matter, but still matter. But beyond that, this tremendous power. And so devotional songs, they're words, and they're sounds, but they're pivoted towards divinity. It's, you could say that they're the words or the sounds that they're trying to break out of their limitation. You know, and they're yearning to touch that source because they're directed there. I sometimes think like, you know, the lotus arching itself towards the sun. And their sound vibrations. Thakur uses the example of like when following a mantra, like Om. It's like the bell, ringing of a bell. A bell rings, and you follow that one ring, subtler, subtler, subtler. Eventually, again, the source, there's only one source. And so when you have these devotional hymns that are, again, yearning towards that source, they're directed towards it. They're poised toward it. And so there's a different type of dynamic takes place, a special shakti. And so Thakur, hearing Narendra, who we just found out just a little while ago, who could use logic and words to tear apart an opponent and tear his words to shreds. He wasn't doing that now. Narendra was now singing with bhakti, and like the pure Homa bird, he was singing, and that purity allowed Thakur to touch that source. He's seeing the purity of Narendra, and seeing that purity and seeing that devotion, Thakur is in ecstasy. So then the song continues. Hridi komalashani bhajatal charan. In the lotus of the heart, worship his feet. And then one of my favorite lines in the song. Dako shantomone prem noine oporu priyadarshan. Behold with the pure mind, with the shantomone, with a peaceful mind, and the eyes of love, prem noine. Behold his matchless and endearing sight, his dear sight, that beautiful darshan. And then then M describes as Narendra is singing those last lines. Again, that world-bewitching smile as he's seeing Samadhi, he's seeing Thakur. The body motionless as before, the eyes half closed, but it seems he was having a vision of that peerless beauty. And seeing that peerless beauty, he was immersed in overwhelming joy. The song now came to a close. Narendra sang, Chidananda Roshi Bhaktya Joga Beshe Hoire Chiro Mogun. Mad with love of God, O mind, remain ever immersed in the bliss of consciousness. Ah, in the bliss of consciousness, in the bliss of love. Chidananda Roshi Hoire Premananda Roshi. M began to turn his steps toward home, carrying this wonderful picture of samadhi and blissful love in his heart. Now and then, he could hear in his heart the echo of the ravishing sweet song, remain ever immersed in the bliss of love. Premananda Roshi Ho Re Chiro Mogun. So, tonight, we have a special arrangement. So to help us imagine what it was like to witness that scene, the scene of Naren singing, we will listen to Naren singing. Naren, a.k.a. Komalakanta, he will sing this same song, the Chintuay Manosh Hori Chidgan Niranjan. And he'll sing it better than I can speak it.
Thank you.
And thank you all for your kind attention. Jai Ma.